to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the teen in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. I'm here with Lou and your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
Serving the tea and getting low. right? Oh, new tagline. Just made it up. How anyway, are you this week, Lorenzo?
I'm wonderful.
Yes, we're going. I'm glad to hear that. I didn't mean to just rush right past that, but as your husband.
Yeah, whatever.
I know that you're wonderful. I spend every week a moment with you, sweetie. No, I'm glad to hear that. I'm just diving right into the show. But I don't want to prevent you.
No, that's it. Not
doing
much.
A little happy talk moment.
Just happy it's fall and winter / winter.
Yes, I said we were not going to get into like Christmas decorations and pie baking this week. All right.
That's why
he's dancing around. Am I right?
Very happy to start doing that thing. Anyway.
That thing that everybody else is doing. Okay.
All right.
So this week we are going to have some movie talk. We're going to talk a little bit about movie news. We're going to talk a little bit about movie previews that we have been to. We were lucky and fortunate enough to see Mary Poppins Returns, which we are embargoed from reviews for, I think, a couple more weeks.
Well, everybody
really
is, not just
sucks.
Us. Just let me.
Yes, I know.
Everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I don't want people to think it's just us.
Yes, they told Tom. Disney came down hard just on us.
They sent us an email.
Yeah. But we're still going to talk about it a little bit. Non-specific sort of way. Other news, the initial reports on Aquaman are surprisingly good. And I, of course, have a few thoughts on that in terms of DC and whether they're writing the ship on their cinematic universe.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that, but that's later.
Yes. And what else? Oh, well, we are going to talk about, we saw The Favorite. We're going to review that one completely. We're going to do a full review on that one. It's opening in wide release, I believe, this week. It's the one starring Olivia Colman as Queen Anne with Rachel Weisz as Lady Marlborough and Emma Stone as, I can't remember, Abigail Marsham, I think her character's name is. Period drama, of course. Actually, period comedy.
I know, that's a good way
we'll
to
get into
it.
That.
Yeah,
we're
we'll
going
to
review that film completely. I was going to write a review of that film for the site, but then Lorenzo loved it so much, and we both wound up sitting down watching it twice together. So I said, why don't we talk this one out? It was fun. And, you know, if you're planning on seeing the film, which it's Taylor recommended, don't worry. This is not really much of a spoiler conversation because it's actually not that kind of film. I think there's not twists and turns to the story. Not really. It kind of ends the way you would think it's going to end. What else? Is that it? Is that it for movies?
I think so.
Yes. And then we'll take a short break. And then we'll come back and we're going to hash out the Shawn Mendes interview in Rolling Stone this week. Shawn Mendes, the young pop star who has long rumored to have been gay, largely by a rumor pushed by gay men, came out and discussed this, frankly, in an interview with the Rolling Stone. We'll get into it because Lorenzo and I are not entirely on the same page on this one, and I think it's a good idea to hash this one out as to gay
it's good
men.
For our marriage to not be always on the same page.
Well, it is. It absolutely is.
I'm joking, yes.
I mean, we are so joined at the hip as a couple. We work together. We do everything together. The one thing we don't do together, though, is work out together. We are very clear about going to the gym separately because that's our time, that's our temple, that's whatever, which is an awesome segue because this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Fabletics, our lovely, lovely friends at Fabletics. Fabletics was born in 2013 and co-founded by actress Kate Hudson, as you all know, because we feature her on our site all the time. The founding team noticed a large disparity in the activewear marketplace. It was very difficult to find trendy, stylish gym wear that was priced affordably. Fabletics came to the rescue. Fabletics creates clothing that's made to inspire physical activity in any type of setting. Moreover, Fabletics always aims to create fashionable on-trend workout clothing at an exceptional price point. Their mantra is live your passion every day. And how does it work? Well, you can take a style pop quiz for a personalized outfit recommendations and shop from thousands of styles curated just for you. Also, you can check out as a guest or become a VIP. With VIP, you can get up to 50% off regular prices, free shipping, and additional perks. And right now, our lovely audience, the you people listening right now, can get two leggings for only $24. That's a $99 value. Let me just get to the... Yes, $99 value by going to Fabletics.com. Sorry, I had to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Fabletics, FABLETICS.com/TLO to get two leggings for only $24. That's Fabletics.com/TLO. Two leggings at $99 value for only $24.
It's a great deal.
And conditions do apply. Thank you, Fabletics. All right. Real quick. Oh, and Lorenzo has a Netflix recommendation.
Yes,
so before
I
we get
do.
Into all the movie talk, let's have Lorenzo do his crying Scandinavian in sweater recommend. Are we still in Scandinavia or have you moved on?
We're moved.
What part of the world are you in now?
Spain now.
Spain.
Yes.
Exciting. Go.
Anyway, I found this very entertaining. It's not a masterpiece, obviously, but it's a very entertaining show called Fugitiva, which is The Fugitive or Fugitive. It's a show produced in Spain. It's with Paz Vega, and I was very excited to watch it. Number one, because I believe I have never watched anything with Paz Vega. I know about her; she's very famous in Europe, and she's gorgeous and fabulous, and she's always wearing.
She's barely known here in America.
I know
though.
It's a shame because she's always wearing like incredible gowns and beautiful things, but we kind of refrain from. Having her on the side because the comment section would be nothing but who is she? You know, I don't know who she is and nobody knows who she is.
Right.
But she's very famous in Europe. She's an excellent actress. So she's the leading actress, the leading character. It's a very interesting show. It's about a woman who she fakes her own kidnapping and her kidnapping and her kids to run away from her husband. So it's a very interesting story. I was hooked from the get-go because I do like shows from Spain. I don't know what it is about them, but they approach it in a different way. Again, I go back to the whole cultural thing. If you watch Almodóvar, if you've seen movies by Almodóvar, you know what I mean. It has that. It's just interesting. It's just a very emotional, very. It's all about families, and this is about a family, and she's running away, and it's about abused. She's abused by her husband, and her husband is involved, of course, with mafia and all that, and then the whole family is in danger, and she decides that she has to, run away from all of it and take her kids with her. Of course, the beginning is all great. I'm not spoiling anything because that's pretty much what, Netflix is giving you as a summary of the show. So, of course, it all goes well with her kidnapping and all that. And then, of course, everything falls apart because otherwise you wouldn't have a show. But it's a great, I thought it was very entertaining. I'm not going to say it's a great show or it's a masterpiece or anything like that. But I was hooked and entertaining. I like shows, and I mentioned this before, I like shows about women taking power. Taking control of the whole thing, and she does, and she's abused by her husband. She can't take it anymore, and she decides to do something about it with her kids. So it's very cool. Again, Paz Vega is awesome, and her performance is really, really good. It's set in Spain, so I love Spain, and it's beautiful. And also, there's a another actress, very famous in Spain, Charo Lopez. She's kind of this amazing icon in Spain. And she plays her mother, and she's so wonderful, so good. So if you know a little bit of a Spanish actresses, actors in general, or if you like that sort of thing, I highly recommend it. I was hooked from the get-go. I couldn't stop watching it. I know that I'm entertained, and I love it when I go to the gym, and I can't wait to get back home to keep watching it. So anyway, that's my recommendation for this week, Fugitiva, or The Fugitive, with Las Vegas.
Yes. Fantastic. Good to know. All right. Let me address the Aquaman stuff first.
Oui, oui.
The first screenings of Aquaman were this past week, and much like our our comments on Mary Poppins Returns. The reviews are embargoed, but people are allowed to give broad social media based reactions to it. And the initial reactions are very, very good, exceedingly good. And some people are calling it the best film in DC's canon. And that means it's a better film than Wonder Woman, which up till now has been considered its best film.
Right.
I made the rather non-controversial point that, noting that DC was having great critical success with their non-A-list characters. In other words, Superman and Batman were problematic, but Wonder Woman and Aquaman seemed to be doing really, really well. So I made a tweet about this, about how maybe they should just put Superman and Batman aside for a little while in their plans and focus on their B character or their secondary characters, I think I called them. And forgot that there's like this bizarre cabal of DC Zack Snyder fans who are just obsessed with reviving the reputation of the films in the DC canon that are largely considered disasters, which is, Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman or Justice League, all of which were Zack Snyder films. DC has clearly moved away from the disaster of those films. The tone of their newer films, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Shazam is coming in a couple of months, too. Completely different from the tone of those previous films, which means DC has clearly read the room and seen that what direction they need to take the characters in. But these fans are loud and obnoxious, and, they spend their time yelling at people on social media for blaspheming them. So there was a lot of that this week.
I remember you telling me, I never forgot the story about people fighting, somewhere you used to go, people fighting about the how many buttons the Wonder Woman outfit.
No, how many stars were on Wonder Woman's panties. Yeah. I mean, when nerds get going, they really get going.
Long conversation about it.
But I don't really want to get into that. It was a pain in the ass. I had to block like 30 people on Twitter this week because they were so ridiculous about it. But we are going to see a preview screening of Aquaman before it opens, but it's actually not for a couple more weeks for us, so I don't have thoughts on the film itself. But if what all the other critics are saying is true, that it's this insane Technicolor fantasy, it's over the top, it's a lot of fun, it leans into the silliness of the genre, then I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly what you do. With a character, at least with a character like Aquaman, with a character like Wonder Woman, you lean into the whole mythic, mythology. Mm-hmm. To get her away from the bathing suit comparisons, you really lean into like the Greek mythology and the hero's journey and all that stuff. And they did that. They did the smartest take on Wonder Woman cinematically that they could have done. And from what I'm hearing, they took Aquaman and they did the smartest take cinematically. If you're a hardcore fan of the comics, you might begrudge this film because there are parts of it that don't look or resemble the Aquaman that you know. I don't just mean the fact that the character is being played by a Pacific Islander man instead of a blonde Aryan looking man, the way the character has always been portrayed. I mean more that they've really ramped up Arthur's personality in a way he doesn't quite have in the comics. He's a bit dull.
Do you think it has a lot to do with Jason Momoa?
I think that's part of it. I think that's if you're going to cast Jason Momoa, and I always said, the minute they cast, it was one of the smarter things Zack Snyder did. The minute he was cast for Justice League, I was like, you know what? That's such a brilliant way to do that character. And at the time, it was very. It's still a conversation people are having, but less so now. But at the time, people were having a conversation about how white superhero movies were. And I remember commenting that this is a great way to, de-whiten them in a manner that makes perfect sense. If he's an ocean-based character, making him an Islander man is, ethnic background.
Right.
It absolutely makes sense for the character. It doesn't feel like an imposition, like some sort of racial imposition on the character that doesn't make sense. And yes, they leaned into apparently Jason Momoa's acting style, which is, I'm going to be honest here, limited. We're not talking Shakespearean in his skill level. And they just ramped up the whole fantasy thing. But honestly, what little I have seen of the film, what characters they're checking off the list, what scenes they're checking off, and what themes they're running with, those are all straight out of his history. That's Aquaman. That's King of Atlantis. That's, his brother wants to dethrone him and his mother was a queen. All of that's straight from the comics. There's a lot of people who sneered at the last trailer because it talked about his, you know, a king with a destiny and uniting his people, and everyone thought that sounded like Black Panther. And of course it sounds like Black Panther, but that's because Black Panther, like Aquaman, is a comic, a superhero character within the King Arthur tradition, more or less. They are essentially King Arthur characters that are meant to unite their people by being superheroes. And Aquaman isn't the only one. Black Panther isn't the only one. There are tons of characters like that in comic books. So, yeah, okay, but I don't there's similarities to Black Panther, but I really don't think anyone could honestly look at that film and say that they were ripping off Black Panther. I don't see that at all.
Right, right.
Anyway, I got too far into this like I always do.
But I just thought it was entertaining to see all these people replying back with, well, look at this guy trying to write about a comic book or whatever.
Right, right.
Like you had no experience reading comic
right.
books or anything like that.
Of course not.
But
it's only been 40 years.
Yes, I know. These conversations are... When it comes to Twitter, that's always how it goes or how it ends.
Not a good place to have a conversation.
No, you can never have a conversation.
All right, moving on. Let us... All right. So, okay, we went to see Mary Poppins Returns this week. We're
right.
going to... sort of dance around certain things.
We can't talk too much about it because here how it works when the press is invited to watch a movie ahead of everybody else. What they do is that they assign a movie theater and then it's just press. But it's just, for some movies, it's kind of a little more relaxed. But
for something like a Disney blockbuster?
I mean, we couldn't even bring our...
We weren't allowed to mention on social media that we were going.
We were not allowed to mention at all that we got invited.
Until yesterday at 12:30 p.m.
And then they set up a date where we could mention, give a few thoughts about the movie on social media. And it's too embargoed to write reviews, so nobody's writing reviews yet. And it's going to be a while before we can do it. But it's just like we couldn't bring our cell phones into the movie theater. They literally collected the cell phones outside the theater.
Right.
Outside the room. And then that's how they do it. You couldn't photograph anything. You couldn't do anything. Couldn't talk about it. Anyway, so it's very hard because... we're very excited about it.
I think we can say in a general sense, right, without getting too much into, like, I will say, first off, there will be an extensive written review.
Right, of course.
When we're allowed to review it. And I've been thinking about the film a lot in the last couple of days because it really caught me off guard. I could tell from the trailers that they really did it. They really went deep on the Disney stuff. But it caught me off guard on just how well they did it. And how emotionally affecting that stuff can be for someone who isn't. I know there are Disney fans out there who live and breathe Disney. I'm not. I think I have more of the average public's affection for Disney, but I'm not someone who lives and breathes it or has to see all the films. And I honestly, I mean, I've seen some big budget Disney releases in the past couple of years, like Beauty and the Beast or Maleficent, I guess. But I don't think I had the kind of emotional reaction I had for this film.
Right, right.
It was emotional. And without getting too far into it, I opted to go back and watch Mary Poppins. I did it last night. It had been a while since I had seen it. We wrote a Musical Monday about it, but that was 10 years ago. And honestly, that may have been the last time I watched the film. And I wanted to see it for several different reasons because I suspected I can't get into it, but I suspected certain things about the second film were repeats of certain things in the first film, and I wanted to see whether that was true or not. But I also wanted to see if I don't recall having tremendous affection for this film in my youth at all. So I was kind of curious why I was having such emotional reactions to this sequel.
Right.
And I went back and I watched the OG last night, and I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't one of the films from my childhood. Like, you and I both said, The Sound of Music? Yes. I had tremendous affection for that film as a young gay kid. Fell in love with Maria von Trapp and blah, 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 blah. Mary Poppins, I don't have that same affection. And when I tried to put myself in the mindset of say, when I was 5 or 6, probably, which was probably the first time I saw it, I remember thinking she was scary. And I remember being confused why she was so harsh with those kids. I understand it now. That's how the character was written. That's the English governess tradition is to be that way with children, at least in that time period. So it was all correct. But it wasn't a film that stirred up nostalgia in me in any sense. I watched the whole thing last night, and I actually wound up fast-forwarding through a lot of the Dick Van Dyke parts. So, again, without getting too far into Mary Poppins Returns, I will say that it is an extremely well-made film. My emotional reactions in this film had to do with the performances and the filmmaking, not with the nostalgia aspect of it. You're very quiet.
I'm waiting, so I can give my impression.
Oh, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. When it was first announced that Emily Blunt was going to play Mary Poppins, I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, my God, here we go. I rolled my eyes, and I just like, oh, we don't need a remake. I don't know about Emily Blunt. I mean, although I love Emily Blunt, but I wasn't sure. And like you said, we're more like a Sound of Music guys, especially because I play instruments, and I remember watching with my grandfather, and it was all about the music part and playing instruments and all that. So I was really attached to the Sound of Music. Saw Mary Poppins a couple of times, but it wasn't really my story. I don't know. As you said, I thought she was a little weird.
I thought she was a little scary.
Yeah.
I thought she was mean.
Right. She was a little scary and, I don't know, just weird.
Can I just share something? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. No, please go ahead.
I just want to share. This goes to both our points. My sister recently showed it to her daughter, who was 5. And she said she loved it. But she found the first half hour or so incredibly confusing, she said, because it's just all people yelling at each other about stuff that, like, suffragette and hiring nannies and working at a bank and everything like that. And when my sister told me that, I was like, yeah, I think that was part of my problem as a kid, is that the story itself was weirdly...
Right.
I can look at it now as an adult. I watch it as an adult, and I'm like, okay, I understand it in the context of, say, 1910 England. And the class of people that they are, and suffragettes, and all of that. But as a kid, I found all that stuff really confusing.
Right. And we also talk about children's book, British or English literature. We talked about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes
it's harsh.
Harsh.
It's harsh.
And yeah, sometimes mean. The characters are mean.
Old English. I mean, classic, Alice in Wonderland all that. That's some harsh stuff.
And I read an interview with Emily Blunt and saying that she said that, you know, Mary Poppins is a very self-absorbed, selfish,
right,
and kind of mean kind of character. So she wanted to play, she played her that way, and she didn't want to. She didn't even watch again. It's one of her favorite movies, but she didn't rewatch the movie.
Which is very smart.
Preparing
of her
for
not
the role,
to
she said, "I can never redo what Julie Andrews did.
Yeah,
I just want to have my version."
Yeah.
We can't talk about it. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to get into trouble. But I have to say, I was very, very emotional throughout the entire movie.
I agree.
And it's very funny. And in certain instances, I'm not going to give anything away, I almost felt like a child watching it.
Yeah.
Because it was just so beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And we're going to talk a lot about it. But right now, we can't say much. But I'll just say one thing, because I mentioned that on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere. I am totally, utterly mesmerized by Emily Blunt's performance. It's absolutely amazing. She did a phenomenal job. I heard her husband
John Krasinski.
John Krasinski, thank you. Cried when he watched it, because it is a beautiful performance. It's absolutely beautiful. And I was watching the whole movie, I was like, kids are going to love this movie.
I can't imagine they wouldn't. I just can't imagine that a kid wouldn't love this movie.
Yeah.
It's magical, but again, we can't get into the
specifics.
Right,
we'll get into specifics later.
I will. I'll look at, when we write about it, I'm going to look at some things that can be looked at from a critical perspective. Mm-hmm. I feel this movie is amazing, and I would highly recommend it, but I also feel that there are parts of it you can discuss.
Of course.
From a critical perspective.
Right.
I'm not going to get into why. Again, because then that's too close to a review. But I can say we loved it. We were extremely emotional through the whole thing. And I can honestly say, and I believe Lorenzo can honestly say, I've known him a long time. Neither one of us have any great love for that original movie. So if we were emotional in this film, it wasn't because we were nostalgic for Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. It's because this is a really well-made film.
Right.
That is in part about nostalgia.
Right.
So it brings up themes of adulthood and leaving childhood behind and the pain of that in a way that is just poignant. I do feel it's a more poignant film than the OG.
Right, right.
Again, though, I don't want to get into too much specific stuff.
We need to stop.
But it was an interesting thing watching the original last night and realizing I don't love this film. I see the charm. All the animated parts are fun. Literally anything Julie Andrews is in that film is fun. She is really good in the role.
You mean Emily Blunt?
No, I'm talking about the original.
Oh, the original, yes.
Yeah. Anything Julie Andrews does in the film is, any scene with her in it is perfect. When you start getting into, I'm sorry, Dick Van Dyke, I know he was a big star at the time. I understand why they put so much attention on Dick Van Dyke in this film, but oh my God, there's a lot. He gets a lot of numbers. He gets a lot of comedy scenes that don't actually age all that well. And then all the stuff, I noted it on Twitter this morning. I was kept thinking about Mr. and Mrs. Banks, and they are really horrible parents. And not just horrible parents, they're kind of horrible people, period. And the film never really gives them any, it just gives them a happy ending that I'm watching it as an adult. I'm like, yeah, these two actually don't actually deserve, I know the kids deserve a happy ending, but I don't know that those two adults did because they're terrible people. It's just funny. I don't have this romantic view of the original Mary Poppins, and yet I would defend Mary Poppins Returns with my last breath. I love that film. Okay. Moving right along, we saw The Favorite this week.
Oh, my God, yes.
The Favorite, starring Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, and Rachel Weisz, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, who is a very respected and discussed indie film director who has got some very interesting films under his belt, like The Lobster, the one that starred Colin Farrell, and
The Killing of a
Sacred Deer, which Nicole Kidman did last
amazing.
Year.
Amazing. Oh, The Danish Girl also, right?
Oh, did he direct that?
No, probably not. Am I? No. I'm sorry. No. Never mind.
Lorenzo throwing me off left
and
right.
I'm sorry. Anyway.
Go.
First of all, I saw the preview. We posted the preview on our site, and I just fell in love with everybody and the costumes and everything, and how the story is told by this director. He has a very interesting approach, how he tells his stories, and he likes I guess he likes things, messed up things, I would say that. He doesn't like perfect things in his movies.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, he does not like that. He likes things messed up a little bit. He feels like things are not... He has a very interesting approach that things have to look natural or they not fake, even though he's a movie.
Yeah.
So he's a very interesting director.
So it's set in the court of Queen Anne in the early part of the very early part of the 18th century, because I think she was dead by 1714. And it deals with the two women on either side of her who are fighting for her attention and fighting to become her number two, Lady Marlborough. Sarah Churchill, played by Rachel Weisz, and then Lady Marlborough's cousin, Abigail, who is poor and starts off as a maid in the story. And it's very much an All About Eve kind of thing where she just grasps her way to the queen's bedchamber and tries to oust Rachel Weisz's character. Now, a story like that is rife with like Shakespearean drama and masterpiece PBS sort of richness and luxness. And the great thing about this film, the fabulous thing about this film, is that it avoids all of that completely. It runs screaming away from all of that completely. As Lorenzo said, it's got a messiness to it. Now, that isn't to say it's not a beautiful film to look at, because, yes, the gowns are beautiful, the castles are beautiful, the gardens that they walked through were all beautiful. There's no denying any of that. But Lanthimos, as a director, does not linger on beauty and looks for ways to make it look imperfect, which is as human gets. It's just such a human way of looking at history. I don't want to overstate this because you can take this thing too far where it's like in a Braveheart direction where like everybody looks like they stink.
And all you can
see is the skin diseases and the bad teeth and everything like that. It doesn't go in that direction so much. There is a style of historic period drama that is shot in that way. And then there's this style, which is, there's a falseness to it. There's a clear falseness to it.
Go ahead. Well, our cats are destroying our curtains right now. Yeah,
our cats. Daisy does that every morning.
She got up there. Anyway.
got a little distracted there. There's a falseness to it. There's a deliberate falseness to the way he shoots this film. There's a lot of swooping camera work, a lot of fisheye lenses, a lot of tracking shots. The camera is constantly moving. And swooping, and the lenses are constantly distorting. And I don't want to make this sound like this is overdone or over stylized, but it's stylized just enough that it lends a wit and a humor to the way the entire thing is portrayed. You never get weighed down with this feeling of history. The three main women in the story and the few men who bop in and out of the story. Nicholas Hoult gives a really funny performance.
I know. Amazing.
Are allowed to be funny and human and messy in a way that like period dramas don't always necessarily allow, especially when you're talking about very high ranking people like queens.
Right.
In case we haven't been clear going into this, this is very recommended. We really loved this movie.
I absolutely love the movie. I've watched it twice and I'm definitely going to watch it couple more times. What I love about his approach is that he decided that because it is about the story is about the women, and he wanted to make the women the focus of the story and the men just background characters.
Morons.
Yeah,
the men are all either fops or morons.
Right, because his way of looking at the whole story was that it's usually men are the center of the story and women are just, you know,
set dressing,
supporting actresses.
Yeah,
you know, just they're not the main character most of the time. They just support the man in the story. And he wanted to flip the script this time, and he wanted them to be the story.
Yeah.
And the man, the morons around them.
Right, right, right.
Which is true. It's funny. It's hysterical.
Right.
So he did a very good job doing that. The story, he kind of reinterpreted the whole story. Some of the stuff going in the movie didn't happen. In real
no,
life.
No, I mean, it is based on history. Yes. These three women did exist. The two women under the queen did fight back and forth legendarily, right, to gain her trust. All of that did happen. One of them was kind of ruined by it briefly, but I'm not going to get into any
right,
of that.
Right, right.
The broad strokes of the film are correct, but he, as a director and the script, went in. They decided to just have
right.
fun with this story.
I really like him as a director. If you really want to watch, if you want to know more about him, The Lobster is a great movie, and The Killing of a Sacred Deer just haunted me for days.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting movie. So he has a different approach to how he does his movies.
I agree. And I want to, next thing I want to do is get into discussing the three performances of the lead actresses, because
right.
they're all very discussable. But before we do that, let us talk about Grove Collaborative. What is Grove Collaborative? It's a customizable auto shipment service that delivers all natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to your door. Their aim is to make living a healthy lifestyle easy and accessible for you and your family. Every product they sell is backed by the Grove Standard, which means that it's healthy, effective, eco-friendly, and affordable. You can shop with confidence knowing everything you buy from Grove is good for you, your family, your home, and the planet. After your first order, Grove will set you up with a personalized scheduled Grove shipments every 30 days, so you'll never run out of the products you love. We got these shipments.
We got
our first shipment earlier this month, and oh my God, it was all incredible cleaning products, high quality cleaning products, more than enough that we need to keep
absolutely
our home clean
amazing.
For the month.
They smell amazing. They're very good, and they're good for the environment.
And they're good for the environment, which always, always, always helps. We We found it really useful. I mean, you know, anytime someone's going to take some of your grocery shopping over for you and just deliver that stuff to your door every month, that is always welcome,
especially if
they're going to deliver incredible products to you. Like their seedling line of products, which is 100% tree-free paper products made from bamboo and sugar cane. Grove makes and carries the best natural products. Every product is vetted to be the most effective, sustainable natural product out there. There is no animal testing. You get refillable glass soap dispensers, from refillable glass soap dispensers to wool dryer balls that last for 1,000 loads. I need another cup of coffee because, I can't read this morning. And they carry a bunch of natural brands that we're already using at home. It's a one-stop shop for household, pet, and personal care staples. Let's see, what else can I tell you? If you haven't already tried Grove, you need to shop today before this deal runs out. For a limited time, our listeners who sign up get an amazing free 30-day supply of Seedling, Grove's tree-free paper towels, toilet paper, and tissues. And we've tried them all, and they're really fantastic.
They are amazing.
A free 60-day VIP membership and a surprise bonus gift just for you when you sign up and place an order of $20 or more. Check out Grove and this special offer at grove.co/tlo.com grove.co/tlo Thank you, Grove. All right, back to the favorite. One of the things this you were talking about how the director wanted to center the women and put the men to the side, and this leads into what I want to say about Olivia Colman's performance, which, girl, she better get an Oscar nom for that one.
Right.
Don't you think that's an Oscar nominated lead actress performance? What I think is interesting about her performance of Queen Anne is it's a very unqueenly performance. When you think of great queen performances, great actresses playing great queens of England, this is not the style of performance you're thinking of. This is a king performance. She performs this character like a man. In a lot of ways.
That's interesting.
Sloppy
yeah.
and loud and obnoxious and difficult and childlike. She's extremely, extremely difficult to deal with. She's a lot to take in this film. You feel sorry for her because there's clearly, you know, she's not, she's had a very sad life, and the story makes that very clear. She's racked with all these health issues. And she's a deeply unhappy character, but she plays that character like a man. And part of that is how she allows this character to be grotesque.
Right, right.
You don't see actresses play queens that way, where they're allowed to be like in a Henry VIII sort of grotesque sort of way. And I don't just mean, she's not wearing makeup and she's wearing a fat suit. I don't mean that. I mean, she is sloppy and ill and terrible to everyone around. She lurches from room to room because she can barely walk. And on top of all that, she's hilarious. She does this all with a lightness and a deftness that you don't hate the character, and you don't feel beaten down by how unhappy that character is. There is a certain comic flair to how she does this.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because I was reading interviews with her and how she played the queen, because the queen was miserable. She had 17 pregnancies.
And none of them survived.
None of them survived. So, of course, she's a devastated woman. She was also kind of a large woman. She used to eat a lot and gain a lot of weight, and she felt horrible about that. She felt miserable about that. She was depressed. Her husband was...
She had gout.
She could barely walk. Her husband was apparently a doormat. So she wasn't a happy woman. And I think she... it's very well played, I think, in the movie. The story that I heard is that... she also gained weight for the part because she really wanted to go there.
I think she's also wearing a fat suit.
No, she's a combination of both. Olivia Colman gained weight for the part, but the character needed more.
Yeah.
So they did some prosthetic...
prosthetic work, yeah.
Prosthetic work.
Oh, we have to talk about the costumes, too.
Yes, but I'm going to get into I just want to talk a little more about their performances.
I agree.
I think Olivia is absolutely phenomenal.
She is amazing in this.
Sometimes you know how great an actor is by just little things. It's not shouting a line.
I agree.
Or a dialogue or anything like it. It's just little things. The way they look, the way they smile, the way they deliver one word. And
I
she
agree.
Is good at that all the time.
All the time. I can remember, I had known of Olivia Colman before Broadchurch. She did a small part in Doctor Who one time. But when Broadchurch came out and we devoured it,
right,
and we got to the scene where, spoiler, she finds out who the killer really is and completely, completely loses her shit on him. I remember saying to you, I was like, that is one of the most amazing performances I have ever seen. All the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. Like, it was raw beyond raw. And that was years ago. And ever since then, I was just like, God, that woman needs more. She needs more work because
right.
I don't know many actresses who are working on that level. So I'm thrilled that she's a lead in a film and getting Oscar consideration now. And then, of course, she's got The Crown season 3. She's working on that right now. So I'm super thrilled for her.
Let's move on to Rachel.
I was just going to say, Rachel Weisz, as an actress, I honestly couldn't tell you what roles have stood out and what haven't stood out in her career. I've never had a problem with her as an actress, but I don't think I really could name many movies. I can't say I don't like her.
The only movie
she was amazing.
Only movie that I remember is The Constant Gardener. She was absolutely phenomenal,
and she was good in that. Yes, you're
really,
correct.
Really, she was absolutely phenomenal.
She's amazing in this though.
But,
she's so funny.
But in this movie, she is fantastic.
She is.
That's the word.
So
she is
charismatic.
Yes. And mean.
Well, that's. Let me just say this.
The whole movie.
The whole movie is mean.
Mean. But not in a, you know,
not,
in a depressing way or anything.
It's just the comedy is mean.
Right.
I mean, people are literally getting beaten on camera, and it's sort of played for laughs.
Right.
Not beaten, but getting slapped around and stuff like that.
And they're just mean to each other. The things they say, how they behave,
even things like the constant, because they're women in history, the constant threat of rape,
right,
is being turned on its head and made fun of in a very. No one gets raped on camera, and no one gets raped. Period. But the fact of rape in history is addressed.
The fact that how women were treated. At
yes,
the time,
and it,
I think
but it's
that,
done
that's...
in like a. funny way. I don't mean to make they don't make fun of rape, please.
No,
I don't
want
to give the wrong impression.
Not, yeah.
The impression I want to give is the film understands that history is harsh and terrible, especially for women, and it treats the whole thing, let's just make fun of it. And that is actually really refreshing. That's
right.
What makes it. So anyway, back to her performance. It's the same sort of mean-spirited,
right.
But you do kind of love her.
The three of them are insane, and the director chose to use to let them talk like like people talk now.
Right. Oh yeah, it's all modern dialogue.
It's modern dialogue. It's not it's not that very, you know, old fashioned. You know, this is a history whatever,
no, Emma
period
Stone
movie.
Going, pop, pop, pop,
I know. I mean,
hilarious.
Emma. And moving on to Emma Stone, let me tell you, I've always loved her. I think she is an incredible actress, and she's very young. I mean, she's still very young.
Yeah, she's really
she's going to be
hit
something.
Her stride.
She is going to be something. She everything she's done so far, I really appreciate her work and her performance. And this is absolutely insane.
One of the things that you just said about little things that actors can do that signifies that they're such a good actor is, and she does it so many times in this film that it almost becomes a thing. She can flick her eyes from one side of the screen to the next, and it's hilarious. All she did is move her eyes, but the way she does it, that's an actor. That's an actor who can imbue even the smallest act with meaning.
I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene in the carriage that the way she looks at the other character, it's so hilarious. She is really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
They're all so good.
They are. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do because they all deserve to be nominated, all of them.
Well, that's the funny thing.
So I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah, the balance of this film is like there's these three characters, these three women characters all fighting for dominance and for, you know, because Queen Anne actually has a journey she goes on as well where she's trying to fight for some form of relevance, I think, some sort of control over her life. And they're all at odds with each other, and they all kind of do terrible things, say terrible things to each other. I mean, what Emma Stone does to Rachel Weisz is so awful. But you don't, I couldn't tell you which one I was rooting for.
Right.
There's no one like, oh, I hope Emma Stone beats out Rachel. No, I didn't care. I just wanted to watch it all
They're
unfold.
They're all nice and horrible at some point in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't really say, oh, this is she's the
this
good
is
one.
The hero.
She's
the,
yeah,
no.
She's the bad one. No, they're all equally bad and good at the same time.
It's a real pleasure of a film to watch, even though it's, like I said, at times a little cruel and mean-spirited.
And it has a lot to do, again, I go back to the director, the way he works the camera. Some scenes are so, it looks like you look inside a fishbowl.
Well, yeah.
It's just that technique that, mm-hmm. that it's so oppressive. It's not like open,
right?
You know, with lots of air and space. No, it's this very, very oppressed, intimate look at some scenes and you know, situations. Also, he decided to use, again, going back to the natural approach, he decided to use natural lighting.
I agree, and that helped. It wasn't like natural lighting in a low lit. No, he sometimes flooded these rooms with sunlight and actually blew out some of the whites in the scene so that it almost looks overexposed. It was a really interesting way of doing it. Real briefly, so we can wrap this up, let's talk about the costumes, which were fanciful and gorgeous to look at, but not necessarily historically accurate.
No, the costumes were designed by Sandy Powell, and she's done a bunch of things.
Well, she did Mary Poppins Returns.
She just did Mary Poppins. She did a bunch of things. She did Wonderstruck, Carol, Cinderella.
Long career.
She's amazing. She's an amazing costume designer. She's done many, many, many things. And she's done some period movies. But she was so excited to do this movie. I read several interviews with her. She was excited to do this movie because, again, it was a very different approach to period movies. And also because there's not a lot of movies out there about the early 18th century.
I agree.
So she was excited to do that. But the budget, as usual, the budget wasn't big, very low budget, so she had to be very creative. And it's interesting. Her approach, because again, combined with the director, the director said, I want the looks. The director was very, very strict about what she could do and how she was going to approach the costumes. And one thing that he said was like, I want it to be look period, like the silhouette or the style in general, but feel free to bring it up to be creative and have a more modern take. So she used the silhouette is there for the most part, but she used all these very, very, very contemporary fabrics.
She used like laser cut laces. There were big polka dot prints.
Right. She went to the Brexit market, I believe, in London, and she bought all these fabrics from Nigeria, from African countries, and that's what most of the fabrics are.
And the other thing that's notable about this, now you said this was historically accurate, that the court was, the characters are all, the female characters, the queen and these two women, are dressed only in black and white throughout the entire film, but you said...
According to her,
that
one
was
of her interviews,
court dress, it was
yes,
required.
It was the color of the court.
It's still an unusual choice to make cinematically, because cinematically that is not how we have ever, the court of,
The
monarch of England's court has never been portrayed that way on film or any way that I can remember. It makes for a very interesting aesthetic because, like I said, they never wear color. The three of them don't wear color in the film. That briefly, before she rises up the ladder, Emma Stone wears other clothes. But once she's in the court, which is 15 minutes into the film, for the rest of the film, those three women are all doing their scenes in black and white outfits. It's very striking. There are scenes sometimes, that music scene where all these women were sitting around listening to a singer and they were all in black and white gowns. It's really striking, but slightly off-putting because it's not our understanding of history.
The irony was that, according to her also, is that the men were going to wear
color.
They were going to wear the color and the women were going to wear black and white.
It makes them seem very serious.
Yes, well, that
very
was
very powerful, and it makes all
them.
The men look ridiculous.
Right, the men look ridiculous, and I read several interviews with her that she said that Nicholas Hoult, when he saw what his character was going to look like first time, he was like, "Are you serious? Is this
hilarious.
What I'm going to look like?" But he embraced the whole thing. He named his wigs because there's a ton of wigs. He just went completely for it, and he had a wonderful time. And we didn't talk about him, but he is really, really amazing and funny in the movie. They're all great.
They're all great.
Lots of wigs. The director also decided that the women weren't going to wear makeup.
But the men did.
But the men did. So the men wear all the makeup. Women didn't. He wanted the wigs to look natural and messy and dirty and sweaty because that's the way people looked in, back then.
Yeah.
So he did not the looks to be perfect. He wanted them to look messy and kind of real.
Anyway, it's highly recommended. The Favorite. If you get a chance to see it, if it comes to your area, please. We loved this film.
Yes,
I thought it was a lot of fun, and those three performances are going to get a lot of attention in the next month or so
as
we head into award season. Yes. So let's take a short break. We're going to come back and argue a little bit about Shawn Mendes. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We are back on the Opinion Fest after a rather long discussion. Neither one of us expected our movie discussion to go that long. And now we're going to move on. I'm sorry?
We get excited. We keep going.
I don't think we're going to linger as long on this next topic, which is regarding Shawn Mendes, who pop singer who gave an interview to Rolling Stone this week that had a lot of people talking, especially a lot of people in the LGBT press, discussing how he has been covered, how he has been discussed. And there was some blowback in what he actually said, because he talked about being pegged as a closeted gay man, and he is still claiming that he is not a gay man, that he is straight. And he was blunt about it in a way that made it clear that this constant discussion hurt him and caused him a lot of stress.
Right.
And there was some blowback on this point. Some people felt it sounded homophobic. Some writers came right out and said so.
Really? I haven't read any of that.
There was some of that. My take is this, and I know you're not quite the same. You came out and said that you thought he sounded like he was a mess.
Troubled.
Okay. I thought he sounded... Okay, let me ask you this. It's not for us to say whether you believe he's heterosexual or not. Do you believe this is a settled issue for him?
I can't... You know, it's not my place to say who's gay, who's not, or whatever. I mean, you come out when you decide to. And if you're not gay, fine. I think we're getting to a point where the younger generation doesn't really care how they're pictured or depicted, you know, or how they're seen, gay, straight, bi, whatever. Most young people don't care. So I thought, you know, so I don't want to judge. If I see a man who looks like a gay or has the stereotypical gay behavior or you know, the way they present themselves, but the guy is straight, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, it should get to a point where we're not judging people by the way they act, you know what I mean, or by the way they talk or so on. So if he's not gay, I thought he was gay, but if he's not gay, then I'm even happier, because I think that's great that a straight man can do whatever they feel like doing or behaving whatever way they think they want to behave. They don't have to have the stereotypical straight man, you know, behavior the entire time. The problem that I have with this is that he's not comfortable with that. Even though he has some sort of like gay mannerism or whatever. But he's not comfortable with that. So that's an issue.
I'm going to say I don't agree with much of any of that.
All right.
That's fine. I don't think it's an issue for him. I think it's healthy for him to talk about this.
I agree.
We have to understand that he sort of thrust into the spotlight, or I mean, he pursued it. It's not like it happened against his will, but he was very young. He was like 16 when he first started becoming famous. He's only 20 years old now. Right. I wasn't even out at 20. Right, I was years away from it. So I'm not even criticizing that. I personally, I believe him when he says he's not gay. This goes back to some of what you were saying about young people. I'll tell a brief story. Earlier this year, I had a chance to meet a semi-distant cousin of mine, who is like 18 or 19 years old. My sister and I met him, and we left, you know, this little meeting, this little gathering. And she said, do you think he's gay? I don't think this person is likely to be listening to this podcast, so it's okay. She said, do you think he's gay? And I said, you know, I cannot tell with young folk anymore.
Right, exactly.
Because they've really broken down barriers, and boys are freer to be a little more, I guess we would have called them flamboyant back in the day. And young girls are a little freer to be more, like, aggressive in a way that we would have called butch back in the day. But that doesn't, we don't live in a time where that is evidence of sexual orientation the way it used to be 20, 30 years ago. So, okay, Shawn Mendes was largely perceived by a lot of people to have been gay. And I'm going to say something here that's a little controversial. And this is something that I think gay men really need to check. The speculation that followed Shawn Mendes around so vehemently for the last few years is largely fueled by the fact that Shawn Mendes is cute.
Well, of course.
No, I'm going to say this. No one ever thought Ed Sheeran was gay. You didn't hear the gays lining up to claim Ed Sheeran.
Right.
Because he's not, I'll be blunt, not cute in that same way. Not cute in that, like, cute little gay boy, cute little twink sort of way. Something that kind of irritates me and all that came up, it's just to flip the script a little bit, Jaden Smith, this in the past couple of weeks, has been going around loudly proclaiming that Tyler, the Creator, is his boyfriend. And this is more or less being danced around, but we will speculate constantly about cute little white boys to the point that we are causing them stress.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong for a young straight man to feel stressed out by constant accusations that he's actually gay. And I don't feel that that's so much homophobia as it is he just wants to be seen for who he is. If he is a heterosexual young man, then he obviously wants to, you know, meet girls. He wants to, you know, get laid. He wants to do all that stuff. And if he's got this constant perception of him as gay following him around, well, that would suck for him.
Right. I think
that would suck.
I think it's a combination of things. Again, as you said, he was very young when he became famous, and now he's huge, famous everywhere.
And still quite young.
He's still very young. So I don't fault him. I don't fault him for not knowing how to behave or how to act, because, you know, when you become famous that quickly, You don't have the experience. The experience comes later.
Right.
So, and even if he has people around him, PR people and everybody else, I mean, he's still young. And now you have social media where the actual famous people, celebrities and stuff, they go on their pages, you know, and say stuff that sometimes their PR people have no control of. And he has a very, very, very large female-based... female fan base. So I'm sure the PR people don't like this, the fact that people are calling him gay, because, you know, it benefits his career to have all these female fans out there, which is fine. That's how it is with a male singer or actor. It's been like this forever. I wish he had a different approach, because the way I feel is that this young generation should make an effort to not make a big deal about these things, because when you are that famous and you make such a big deal about these things, it does send the wrong message. But again, you can't fault him. You can't blame him, because he's way, way too young. But the problem that I had, he went backstage. I guess he attended one of Taylor Swift's show, and he went backstage to see her, or he was with her. I don't know the whole story, but she put makeup on him. They were just joking. I mean, why not? She put makeup on him, and she apparently videoed the whole thing, shot the whole thing, and then she wanted to post it on her account. I believe that's the story. So she contacted him and asked permission, and he freaked out. He woke up in the middle of the night, and he said yes, no problem. And then the next day he woke up and he had pretty much a panic attack. That's what he said. Because he couldn't, he was like, oh shit, I gave her permission and now people are just gonna go after me being gay and all that. That's one instance.
Then I don't have a problem with that.
All right. The second thing was that he went to see Love, Simon, the gay movie about the gay kid. And again, according to him, he left the movie theater because he had a panic attack. He couldn't watch it. Okay. Then he gave an interview. What was the magazine we posted? I forget about it. We posted an interview with him later. I forget.
One this week that we're...
Yeah, yeah. What's the
Rolling Stone one. That's the whole point of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he gave that interview. Talked about it, and then right after, minutes, hours after the Rolling Stone came out with the interview, no pun intended, he went on social media immediately to say that this is just one point of view, you know, out of context, blah, blah, blah. So he was trying to defend his answers to the magazine already. So clearly he has an issue with that, and I understand there's a lot to carry on his shoulder as a young person, but I wish he wouldn't make such a big deal, but it's easy for me to say that. I understand all that, but it would be great if he just didn't take all this stuff so personally. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, to kind of question if whether people have the right to question or not. That's completely different.
I would again, we're not on the same side on this, because I look at the complete opposite take. I have the complete opposite take here, which is not that Shawn Mendes needs to watch himself or rethink certain things, but that gay men who write about these celebrities really need to rein it in especially when you're talking about really young ones, when you're wildly speculating about their sexuality. I actually understand and sympathize with him that glitter mascara story he told about Taylor Swift, that actually made me sad, because I want to live in a world where any boy can put that stuff on his face as just to be fun or to express himself and not have to worry about people calling him gay for it. There's a reason why straight boys are so afraid of this accusation, is because we make it into something that we hammer them with. It wasn't like gay writers or gay male writers for years were saying, you know, Shawn Mendes will accept you if you come out, so please feel free to... No, it was, oh, he's cute and he's putting on glitter mascara, ha ha ha, he's in the closet. That makes a kid feel gay, feel bad, gay or straight. That's my take on this, is not, oh, Shawn Mendes really has a lot of work to do. He's 20 years old. We all had a lot of work to do at 20. My take is, you know, the gay press, the people who write, people like us who write about gay celebrities and who are also gay, need to be very careful about this sort of thing in this day and age. You can do damage to young people. If he is gay, all this speculation has made it much harder for him.
Right. I agree.
And I think that needs to be examined. And if he's not gay, all this speculation has been unfair to him.
Right.
So I do feel he's got reasons to be tense about this sort of thing and to be hurt about this sort of thing. And I don't really think there's anything homophobic about admitting that. I think, looked at a certain way, I can feel very supportive of what he just did in this interview, because it allowed him as an ostensibly straight young man, that's how he's identifying, to own his own sensitivity and his own fears. And that is not something young straight men are allowed to do publicly.
I understand.
We should embrace when young straight men or straight identified men want to be open about their fears and want to be open about expressing, say, a little bit of femininity without being pegged as a gay man for it.
I think it's how you approach it. And again, I can't blame him. He doesn't have the experience, so he just doesn't have it in him. But I'll give you an example. I mean, he went on and on about, he goes on and on about people thinking that he's gay, and then there's all this stuff about him being gay. And then little things he does, he's afraid that these things are going to make people even talk more about him being gay. But, you know, you don't see people out there afraid of being pegged as a straight person.
Because no one accuses anyone of being a straight person.
That's exactly my point. So
he didn't create that world.
I'm not saying he created that world, but he's of a generation that could approach this a little better. I'll give you an example. Harry Styles, for example. You could see him as this flamboyant, more open, more, you know, ready to experience anything outside the straight box, per se.
I don't think he's perceived that way.
Maybe because of the way he approached things. I'm just saying people are different. People have different ways of approaching things. I'm sad that he has to go through this and that he's not comfortable with any of this, which is, you know, it's true. It's a valid feeling and way of looking at things. But at the same time, I don't know. I wish his answers were a little more polished. That's all I'm saying. But he's young, inexperienced, and that's just the way it is.
I agree with that. That is just the way it is. And we'd love to hear you kittens hash this back and forth.
Yes.
What you think of our kind of slightly opposing takes on this one. I believe that is it for this week. We are going to flip off our mics and then beat each other over the head with pots and pans. Because we're really angry at each other.
No, that's not true.
Actually,
people.
We have lots of work to get back to. Lots of posts to get up for the rest of today. So thank you for listening to our rambling cartoon
voices once
again, darlings. Yes. And we'll be back next week with more opinions. And we love you. We'd be nothing without you.
Yeah, so that is very, very true.
Bye-bye.
Bye.